And our next guest has lived an incredible life, and there is a whole lot more that he is going to be doing. Please welcome to London Live right now a student at Huron University College and also a Queen Elizabeth II Platinum Jubilee Award recipient, Neal Dang. Neal, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Very great to be here.
Neal, we were telling a little tiny bit of some of your story not too long ago. And you were very, very young. Life was going along. And all of a sudden, you become a refugee. Your village that you were living in was destroyed. How much of that, and how young were you, do you even remember happening?
Yes, I remember every single bit of that fateful day. It was early in the morning at around 4 a.m. My dad woke me up and I woke up to gunshot, and he told me that I have to flee and go to a refugee camp. He asked me to stuff a few clothes into a small paper bag and grab a bottle of water. And when I got outside, I saw my entire village disappearing in front of me. I saw houses being burned down. I saw people, you know, I saw someone lying on the ground bleeding. You know, there was gunshot everywhere, and we had to flee. And, you know, it took me 2 weeks to get to Kakuma Refugee Camp. I was 11 years old, and then I got to Kakuma Refugee Camp by myself, and I had to start a new life again as a refugee.
So wait a minute. You just said you were 11 years old, and you went to a refugee camp by yourself. Your dad was not able to accompany you?
Yes, my dad was not able to accompany me. He has to remain behind in the village, so mostly they had women and children to leave, and men were expected to remain behind to defend the village.
Wow. And you arrive in a refugee camp at the age of 11. Did you know anyone else who came with you? Were there other people from your village who you may have known?
Yes. So it was actually a big group. It was around 12 families that came with us. And after we got closer to the Kenyan border, we separated into two groups. So three families came with me to Kakuma Refugee Camp, and the other group went to another refugee camp in Uganda. So I knew three families that I got into to Kakuma with from my village.
And then all of a sudden, life is very, very different. What was life like in the refugee camp?
Life was very challenging in the refugee camp. So the refugee camp is a big, it's a very small, camp with over 250,000 who have fled war from South Sudan, from the Democratic Republic of Congo, from Uganda, from Burundi, from Rwanda, from Somalia, from Ethiopia. And they're living in these small congested houses, and I was staying in a very small compound with 18 other people. And because I was under the age of 18, I was put up with a foster family that took care of me, that I was living with. And it was very challenging. You know, we don't have access to running water. We don't, you know, have access to enough food. You know, sometimes you'll have 1 meal a day. You know, in our school, we just have like 2-3 textbooks that are being shared by over 100 kids in a very tiny classroom. We do not have access to qualified teachers, and you're not even allowed to leave the camp. So even if you have to leave the camp, you have to get a special permission from the Kenyan government that allow you to travel out of the camp and come back. So it was like a very, very challenging and difficult situation in the camp.
We're talking with Neal Dang, who is studying right now at Huron University College, and we're going to be talking about what led to the Queen Elizabeth II Platinum Jubilee Award for a whole lot of humanitarianism, a whole lot of activism, a whole lot of community work, things that have become very, very special, Neal, to you. School. You just mentioned school. How drawn to school were you at that point, and how much did you realize that that could be a really important part of your life?
Yes, so I knew that school was a very important part of my life because as a kid when I was growing up, my dad used to have a small radio back in my village in Ethiopia, and he would listen to the news. And one day I remember asking him when I was about 9, what did it take for me to also broadcast news on his radio? And he told me that I need to go to school, you know, pass very well in Ethiopia, and then go to an American college, learn good American English, go to the UK and work for the BBC. So that was my dream as a kid. So when I get to the refugee camp, I remember after being registered by the UN as a refugee, the first question I asked the registration officer was, would I be able to go to school and achieve my dream of becoming a journalist? And they told me yes. And, you know, after a few months in the refugee camp, I was able to go back to school. And that is when my life took a turn. You know, school gave me a space where I was only able to learn knowledge and skill, but it gave me a space to heal from my trauma and to look toward a brighter future again. You know, it was a very transformative moment for me. And I saw that education was the only way I could achieve my dreams of becoming a journalist, but also I could be able, you know, to become, you know, an important member of my community and contribute toward building a better future, not just for myself and my family, but even for the entire country.
So the dream of being a journalist, take us to that. Where has it changed? Have you looked in maybe different directions as you've grown older?
Yes, I've looked at different directions. Have I grown older? Right now, I'm thinking of working, you know, for the UN, because I've seen firsthand the work they do to support refugees all across the world, not just in Kakuma refugee camp. You know, through my advocacy work with the UN over the last 3 years, I've been able to visit the refugee camp to interact with refugees and hear their stories. And you know, that is the direction I'm looking at. But I really want to be able to engage the media, to raise awareness about refugees. So I hope to do a lot of media commentary. I also hope to write a lot of op-eds. For the last 2 years, I've been able to write op-eds for Al Jazeera, for CNN, for the national other newspapers. I hope to do a lot of media engagement. But my dream is more now aligned toward the work that the UN does.
We're talking right now with Neal Dang, who is studying at Huron University College. How did you get involved with work through the UN?
It actually happened back in the refugee camp. So as I said, through my journalism dream, I love stories. And I would just go around my classroom and talk to kids, you know, who come from other, you know, countries and hear their stories and how they get to the camp. And I realized that there were so many kids in my classroom who were still traumatized by the brutal images of war and violence they witnessed in their countries. And as I mentioned earlier, we do not have access to a lot of resources in my school. So it was a very tiny school. And, you know, there are not a lot of extracurricular activities. So I was like, you know, why should I not create a space? So I started a club in my school where every Wednesday would come together and just talk about our stories, talk about the challenges we face in the camp. And then it grew into something big. We start running mentorship program for young people in the camp. We start running life skill workshop and workshop in peace building, entrepreneurship, workshop in digital skills to help young people, you know, keep onto that hope. And we, you know, in just 1 year, we were able to reach more than 1,000 young people in the camp. And that inspired me a lot. I was just 16 years old. I saw that I could actually do something big. So after that work, you know, I started getting involved in other organizations that were inspired by the work that I was doing, that I started coming in to support the work we are doing in the refugee camp. You know, my story started going around, and I was receiving invitations to speak at international conferences from across the world about the work I was doing in the refugee camp, about the young people I was working with, and about the challenges they were facing and how the world can help. That is how it all started.
Wow. And just finding those stories. I mean, we tell stories in journalism and in what we do in talk radio and in the news every day. But without people to tell those stories, the stories aren't quite the same. You're getting the stories right from individuals like yourself who have been through these incredible and sometimes very difficult times.
Yes, yes, exactly. I think one thing I've seen a lot, you know, especially in the media space, is that sometimes the individual who go through these challenges do not have an opportunity to tell their own stories. And that is something I've been working toward changing, because I think it's very different to hear about refugees from a journalist or from a politician than to hear about refugees from a refugee, someone who have gone through that experience firsthand and who know very well the challenges that refugees go through. And, you know, I think that authentic storytelling is one more people. You know, when I go around the world and talk to people at universities, you know, engage with world leaders at conferences, you know, my story really more people because it is firsthand experience. You know, there are very few refugees today in the world who are involved in this advocacy work and who like have the platform that I have today to be able to tell their stories firsthand. And I think that is something that can help us a lot in just being able to see that refugees are just people like us, people like you and me who have, you know, who have nothing except that they have lost their home and all they need today is just a place where they can live peacefully and rebuild their future.
You talk about the platform that you now have. Is there a place where people can see some of your work and some of the stories that you have been able to uncover?
Yes, yes. You know, if you Google my name, so many things will come up about me. So I'm very active on all social media accounts. I'm active on Twitter. I use Twitter a lot. My handle is Neal at Neal G. Deng. And then I'm also on Instagram, Neal G. Deng, as well as Facebook, Neal Deng. And also, you know, on those social media, I share about the work I do. You know, as I said, if you Google my name, you'll look through some of the op-eds I've written about different young people that I've come across, different stories that I share every day. So I think social media would be a good way for people to keep, to keep updated about the work I do.
Well, the work you do is not to receive awards. This is to make a difference in lives, and you're certainly doing that. But congratulations, Queen Elizabeth II's Platinum Jubilee Award, and it is something that certainly has allowed us to say, hey, what is Neil doing? And tell us more about it, and thank you for doing that, and thank you for the work that you do. If there was something that you would like to tell all of us that could help, that could make this world a better place, is there anything that you'd like to look around and see one day?
Yes, I think so. Since I came to London, I've been involved in different initiatives, to support, the community that, has given me so much. I see education as something very precious to me. There are just 6% of young refugees across the world who have access to education. I think the most important thing that I've seen in life is that every one of us has something they can contribute to their community. So we should always ask ourselves every single day, how can I spread a culture of care today? How can I be kind to those around me? How can I spread compassion? How can I help the vulnerable, be it, hand out people on the street, be it someone struggling with mental health, be it, people struggling with poverty. There's so many different ways we can support, each other in our communities, be it refugees. We just need nothing but just a place to live peacefully and achieve their dreams. So I think, the most important thing is asking ourselves every single day, how can I help? How can I spread a culture of care? And people don't have to look far. Sometimes I think we need to talk about poverty, we need to talk about, issues affecting women and girls, like gender-based violence. We always think about, countries in the global, south. But I think even here, right here home in London, Ontario, there are people who are struggling in so many different ways. So it's all about asking ourselves, what can I do today? You can, help raise donation, maybe for a women's shelter, for an organization that is supporting, hand-out people. You can help, support, humanitarian organization in your community that are helping refugees and newcomers be able to integrate. There's just so many different ways and multiple ways to get involved. And also something very, very important is that we need to elect leaders who care about our communities, who care about helping and helping spread that culture of care and leading with empathy.
Yeah, we don't realize the power that we have in a democracy to elect the individuals that we do and the ones that will make that change. Well, you said it, four simple words, how can I help? And I don't think we ask those words or we say those words or we ask that question quite enough. Neil, thank you for doing that and showing us the impact that it can have. Thanks for spending some time with us and best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much for having me and good luck with everything too.
That is Neil Deng. And Neil says, if you're looking for the stories that he's telling or you're looking to find out more about some of the things that he's doing, you can Google Neil Deng, which is NHIALLDENG. So just look him up. You'll find his socials and you'll see the work that he has been doing.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.